Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF College Podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy Slant, powered by Pro Football Focus. I'm your usual host, Michael Moore, along with our usual co-hosts, Brandon Marion Lee and Dan Schneier. We will get into all of the injury news for Week 6, along with another edition of This or That, where we will tell you if you should start this player or that player. But first up, you two, as you know, our icebreaker every week. This week, I was thinking about very dramatic finishes, very dramatic losses, wins, etc. in our various fantasy leagues. Brandon, I know you pretty much beat my ass pretty well in the Scott Fish Bowl this week. So that wasn't very dramatic.
And you were ranked so high.
I'm still top 10, not to brag. I'm still top 10, but you definitely knocked me down a notch or two. So, but that leads us to the question, your most dramatic finish. And it, you could either be on the winning side or the losing side. Doesn't matter. Just most dramatic, go.
I felt kind of bad. I was at the Jets game. They were playing San Diego. It was 3 seasons ago. And I beat my dad in our league. And normally I don't feel bad about these things at all. But my dad had never even come close. And so he
like winning like a game or like the chance?
No, the league. Okay. And I was right. Freezing cold at this game. Like it was December. I think early January, freezing at this Jets game. And my husband is sitting there not paying attention to his phone. So I just keep looking. And as I'm looking, my battery is just like going down, 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 down. And I'm getting sadder and sadder and sadder because I'm like, I am clearly going to win this game. I am clearly going to win this game. And when I got home, my phone was completely dead. And there was just a message from my dad. It was after the 1 p.m. game. So it was already over. Like it was over. And my dad called and he was like, hey, sweetie, it's your dad. And the sorrow was just so palpable. I couldn't even call him back until the next day. I felt so terrible. I've never felt bad about a win, but you know.
Sounds like you did.
I did. I felt bad.
Yeah. All right, Dan. Most dramatic finish in a fantasy matchup for you.
Okay, so I've got a great one, actually. So this takes me back to college. I was at the University of Wisconsin, and it was a Monday night, and this was in the early, early days. This was probably 2008 or 9. This was in the early days of quarterback streaming, so it wasn't as popular of a strategy. And I don't know why this happened. Maybe I had a bye week, maybe I had some injuries, or maybe I was just in full streaming mode at that point based on my strategy going into the year. But I was starting Chris Redman, who at that point was signed about a week or just wait for it. He was signed about a week or two before this start on the Atlanta Falcons on a Monday night home game inside that Falcons dome against, I believe, I'm not sure, it was one of those three division teams. It was either the Saints, the Panthers or the Bucks. I want to say the Saints just because they're always god awful on defense. And I knew the matchup was great, but by the time it rolled around to Monday night, I needed 25.5 points from Redmond, which seemed absolutely absurd for a street free agent and somebody who has no history of doing anything. But anyway, I had a major, major test the next day. Forgot what class it was, but I'm sitting in the stacks, we used to call them. It was the in our library at school. We had these stacks basically where it was just kind of the cubicle setup. It kind of looked like a prison almost, if you really saw this. I'm trying to get the picture in your head. Just these like little 4x4 stacks with like cages, like of just like people just studying, like across the room, just like 50 bodies in a room, all in their little space. And Anyway, I'm sitting in the stack and I can't do any studying because I just have Game Tracker open, and bang, he hits his first touchdown. Bang, he hits his second. And then like he has enough yards. He's like racking up 260. I don't even know how he did it. I never actually watched the highlights. I was too happy. But then he needed one more touchdown just to do it. And he broke it and he hit the touchdown. He went over, like, I didn't think he finished like 26 or 27 points. And to this day, I'll always call it the Chris Redmond game and I'll never forget it. And it won me the matchup.
Did you?
I don't even know if I ended up going anywhere that year or anything, but I'll always remember the Redmond game.
Tell me you got the jersey or something, even a replica.
You know what? I still don't have a Chris Redmond Falcons jersey. I think you might be my next purchase. Yeah.
I don't even know if they exist anymore, but
I think that's the move.
I've got two real quick. So last year I was in the semifinals of our home league and I think I was down like 40 or 50 points and I was facing my brother who generally doesn't know what he's doing and he has a buddy help him out and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was going into Sunday night and the Cardinals were playing and I had David Johnson and it was week 15 and I don't remember the exact stat line, but I literally went to bed because I'm like, you know what? I'm down 40 or 50. Like, I'm good. Like, it's not going to happen. Good game, whatever. I think I even texted, like, congratulations, like, good job, Sean. And, like, sure enough, I wake up the next morning and I check the box score and, like, David Johnson had 65 standard scoring points or something like that.
And I'm like, that game was crazy. Okay.
Yeah, and I didn't even stay up to enjoy it, which is the really sad thing. But an even more dramatic game, and this is truly dating myself, that we're going to go back to like 1999, 2000. Because remember, I was doing this like in school, mind you. And I was tied
with a guy.
You're
secretly 50.
Huh?
You're secretly 50, actually.
Probably. <Yeah. laughs> I just aged really well.
You look great.
We were tied, me and another guy, and it was regular season. And he had, and again, get ready for these names. Jamal Anderson, who was running back for the Falcons, and Troy Aikman, right?
Aikman. So
thinking, Aikman.
Yeah, seriously. Hold on. So I'm thinking, like, okay, it's over. Like, there's no point even watching this because there's two guys we're tied. No, like, it's over. So, like, the second play of the game, Jamal Anderson literally tears his ACL, right? And that was the year after he ran for, like, 1,800 yards. So he was a high pick. He went down, didn't play the rest of the game. Troy Aikman ended up throwing like three picks and like no touchdowns. And I'm not even kidding, had negative points that night.
Wow.
And I ended up winning the game.
Wow.
Because Jamal Anderson tore his ACL and Troy Aikman threw three interceptions. It was awesome. I'll never be able to match that or repeat that ever. So just remember, folks, even when hope is completely lost, there's always a chance. And Jamal Anderson can tear his ACL. But anyway, so that's my two dramatic stories. So, but nonetheless, we will get to the present day and this week's action. Let's start with probably the biggest news of the week, just because maybe it's not a lot of news this week, but it is the biggest news. Colin Kaepernick of the 49ers will start at quarterback this week. He unseats the, fantastic Blaine Gabbert. That was being facetious. So Kaepernick, Brandon, at Buffalo. Obviously, you know, we know the obvious. He adds a dimension to the offense that Gabbert didn't quite have. But, I mean, what can we honestly expect from him from a fantasy standpoint?
I don't know if he does add much. Actually, Blaine Gabbert was rather mobile. That was one of his strengths, to be entirely frank. So I'm not entirely sure what he is going to add. I will say that it's going to be different. That makes me a little bit nervous. For instance, you know, Jeremy Curley has certainly come alive recently. Again, the slot position for the Chip Kelly offense, whatever that may be, by the way. You know, we keep saying Chip Kelly offense, but you know, when you look at each year, it's very weird. It gets worse. And it gets worse throughout the year. It's a very inconsistent place to be. I will say, though, that Jeremy Curley is playing in the slot 90% of the time. The only people playing in the slot more are Sterling Shepard, Tyler Boyd, and Cole Beasley on a snap-per-snap basis. So that role is going to continue. And as far as we know, that's the only role that's actually been solidified in any sort of Chip Kelly offense on a consistent basis. So I would like to believe that will remain the same. But certainly we haven't seen, you know, I'd love to give you some sort of like statistical evidence as to how I believe that Colin Kaepernick is going to play. But I personally believe it's been such an extended period of time that any sort of stats from back in the day, although I'm sure that Dan and you know, Mike will give you some great ones, aren't really relevant anymore. I don't know who he is anymore as a player. I don't know what he can do. And I don't feel comfortable leaning on those old numbers. It was a completely different coaching staff. It was a completely different era of life for him. I don't know. I'm not entirely sure what to say about it other than hopefully Jeremy Curley remains. But even so, this week I'm a little nervous about Jeremy Curley. I don't know what this offense is going to look like.
So yeah, Dan, what, I mean, you know, maybe not so much about Kaepernick himself, but the guys around him. I mean, you got Carlos Hyde, who has quietly turned in a pretty good fantasy season in a lot of garbage time. And then, you know, you've got Torrey Smith off to another slow start. And as Brandon mentioned, you got Curley. So what, you know, what kind of discernible difference can we expect from the other players on the 49ers?
Yeah, and I mean, I actually went back and watched Colin Kaepernick's preseason snaps this year with Kelly because I kind of wanted to get a better idea of what to expect this week. And I think that obviously you shouldn't take everything away from the preseason, but I just kind of wanted to see if there was anything that changed now that he has a new scheme. But it was the same old quarterback I've seen the past two seasons. He's very willing, quick to bail in the pocket. He's not accurate. And like Brandon was saying, how much different is he really than Blaine Gabbert? He's kind of like a more jacked up version of Blaine Gabbert, even though now he's a vegan. So I don't even know if he still has the strength. We'll have to find that out. But we all saw what that happened to Arian Foster's, how that affected Arian Foster's career. But
good point. The vegetarian angle, Dan, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you need the protein. But it's not even vegetarian. Remember, vegan, it's different.
Oh, it's even worse.
It's more extreme. Yep. No eggs, no milk, whatever. So anyway, so I look back and he's kind of similar. Like Brandon just mentioned, he brings the same thing as Blaine Gabbert. He can run. He's mobile. He's got a big arm. And Gabbert had a lot of zip on his passes. Gabbert could throw the football. But just like Kaepernick, he's not accurate. And Brandon mentioned that the slot position was probably the most solid role in Chip Kelly's tenure. But he also had a couple great X receivers in Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson. A lot of people this week have been asking me, you know, can Torrey Smith be that guy? Can Torrey Smith kind of be everything that we kind of built him up to be? And not everybody here, but I was a big fan of him in the preseason. I thought he would kind of play that role. But you know what? The more I think about it, the more I just think Colin Kaepernick is going to hold him back. We're talking about somebody who hasn't posted a positive grade overall as a passer since 2013. You know, without Jim Harbaugh, he's looked very lost as a quarterback. And I just don't know if his head's completely in the game. That's my personal opinion on it. I don't think he has the drive that you need to succeed at the quarterback position. And I know that sounds like narrative street, but to me, it's the one position where it matters the most. So I'm not buying anything here. And he's got a tough first test because this Buffalo Bills defense has somehow figured out a way to really play much, much, much better this season under Rex Ryan. They've really turned things around. They're top 10 in both our pass rush overall and our pass coverage grades overall. So this is not a good start for him.
2013, the year of the Harlem Shake.
There you go.
that is super.
I'm glad that was the only year of the Harlem Shake.
Yeah, and thrift shop and blurred lines. Let's get awkward over here.
Are you just doing this on purpose to make us feel worse about ourselves?
It's been that long since he's been relevant, is what I'm saying.
Touche. Okay, point made. And as a 49er fan, I can tell you the Harbaugh days seem like very, very long ago. So, which is just too bad. But, all right, let's move on. Yeah, let's move on. We've got some injuries that players are dealing with this week. Let's first get to Eddie Lacy. Bit of an ankle injury, kept him out for the second half of last week's game. Did get some practice time in today, which, you know, initially people thought, oh, great, James Starks can have the every down role, but now he's not practicing today. So now it looks like Eddie Lacy might actually have a better chance to play this week than James Starks. So, Brandon, even if Lacy can go, what can we expect? They are playing against Dallas, who, you know, has a fairly decent run defense this year.
Yeah, and unfortunately, if you watch the actual games, it's been a very difficult time for James Starks to get anything going when he has had any sort of time. You know, he's only averaging 1.8 yards per carry. He, you know, 24 carries, only 42 yards. Now, here's the deal. Eddie Lacy has 54 carries, but at least he's had 295 yards.
Oh, yeah.
There's a huge difference there. So as a fantasy player, I'm hoping that Eddie Lacy can play. And I would not go out and grab James Starks and just plug and play and think that he'll be productive. There's something is lacking in his game this year. His points per opportunity is way down. Just I he hasn't had a lot of opportunities, so I don't want to go too off the rails here, but certainly I don't think this is a solid plug and play. This isn't a Jaquizz Rodgers situation. No, just kidding. but I will say that
we all saw that one coming, didn't we?
Right. Well, you know what? I had to plug him in a couple places. It was like, well, I felt like I was a genius, and actually it was just lucky, but, I'll take it.
If anyone's grading out there, then you graded out pretty well.
Absolutely. If anyone's paying attention to what I'm doing. So I will say, though, they have enough weapons in Green Bay that I don't think they're going to lean on James Starks if he's the guy. And now that he's hurt, to me, it's just game over. I'm not even considering it.
Well, and I think the more interesting thing is they literally have no other running backs on Green Bay's team. They've got Lacy and Starks and somebody named Don Jackson do you have any knowledge of this Don Jackson person?
I don't know too much about this Don Jackson.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's pretty much any Lacy or bust.
Good time for us.
But I think I agree with you, Brandon. I mean, look, it's not even like whoever plays it's not going to be a good matchup anyway. And look, the Packers don't run the ball that much. I mean, we talked about it, I think, last week. Lacy's has been efficient. He's just not seeing the carries. I mean, he's not seeing more than 15 a game, and I don't think you can rely on that, you know? Mm-mm. So. All right, well, let's go to a more positive running back scenario this week, at least I think. So, Dan, we've got Jonathan Stewart of the Panthers returning, or probably returning, I should say. The Panthers are playing the Saints. The Carolina running backs have not done well in Stewart's absence with Artis Payne and Fozzie Whitaker, at least not from a running the ball standpoint. So if Stewart can come back, is he a guy that people should plug into their lineups?
Yeah, so for me, Stewart's been a guy that I've always kind of faded as far as a weekly game goes. I think that there's kind of a low ceiling as far as the touchdowns go. Obviously, you can look at last week. You could see Cameron Artis Payne scored twice. One was a fourth and goal that if you have Cam Newton in the lineup, that ball's getting the end zone a lot sooner than fourth and goal. And the other one was kind of a zone play to the outside that Artis Payne just really made a really quick cut to get to the outside and got the edge. I don't really see Stewart doing that. That's not his game. His game is kind of yards after contact. That's been the one stat category he's really stood out among other running backs in as far as our advanced stats go over the course of his career and the last few seasons with the Panthers. So I just really don't see the upside with Stewart. Sure, I mean, it's an incredible matchup with the Saints, and there's some volume to be had, but I think they'll kind of ease him back into the lineup, use Fozzie Whitaker. Cameron Artis Payne, again, could see some more snaps. Even Mike Tolbert around the goal line. I mean, there's a lot of guys that work in there. And I think you're kind of just hoping and praying for a touchdown that's never going to come when you play Stewart, because I don't really see the yardage coming there, at least not his first game back. So I'm out on Stewart. I know the matchup looks great on paper. I think it's fool's gold.
Okay. One more running back to talk about, at least one more running back situation, I should say. Arian Foster is expected to be back this week. He does get a pretty tough matchup against the Steelers. Brandon, maybe, you know, not so much for this week, but rest of the season. You know, obviously the Dolphins running game has been fairly non-existent so far, as has most of the offense for the Dolphins. But is Foster anyone to either add on the waiver wire or to monitor for the rest of the season?
You know, they're playing against the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're going to have to score some points.
Are they going to have to?
They're going to have a hard time doing that, though.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to say. Again, I've discussed this numerous times with the Ryan Tannehill shade that unfortunately I've been consistently throwing, but has yet to prove really all that wrong. But the offensive line is a disaster. I don't know what they're doing with Tunsil right now. They're moving people around week by week. I don't understand what they're thinking as an offense in general. You know, Adam Gase came out and said that no one's job's safe, but then he also came out and said, but don't worry, Ryan Tannehill's still our quarterback. Well, when you don't have anyone other than Matt Moore behind you and your coach had to come out and say that you are still the starter, it's just not good. So I think that unfortunately if you look at what they're able to do, it's not a whole lot. And actually, Jay Ajayi was doing a lot after contact last week, and that's the only reason they got anything going. And by the way, Jay Ajayi, I'm not exactly, you know, jumping up and down about that either. But Arian Foster coming off an injury, I'm worried about him. I'm worried about him getting hurt again. I just think that with the offensive line, that's what it's showing to me, is that that is the potential for every week. So if I have Arian Foster and he's coming back and someone is desperate, I'm trying to get him traded away. If I held on to him, this is the week that I let it go.
You finally let it go.
It's desperate out there though. I know a lot of our listeners have been hanging on to him. They're like, finally. And you know what? Yeah, you can probably play him, but man, if he has even a remotely decent game or shows a spark, I think you just get out of that fast.
Well, yeah, because I think truly any stellar performance from a Dolphin this season, I think, is going to be a blip, not necessarily the norm. So yeah, I agree with you. You should cash in on that. I should also say you definitely got a shout out from the podcast on Sunday with me and Mike and Scott, because it felt like the ultimate Ryan Tannehill vindication game for you. So
he's so Tannehilling right now.
You're in our thoughts and prayers, just so you know. All right, let's move on. One more bit of injury news, and then we will get into this or that. The Ravens receivers, a little banged up between Steve Smith and Mike Wallace. But, you know, more importantly, they did fire offensive coordinator Mark Trestman this week, replaced him with old hand Marty Morningwig. So, Dan, I mean, you know, one of the big issues last week was the Ravens started off running the ball well and then seemingly abandoned it to detrimental effect. So what can we, you know, expect with these injuries to the receivers and a new offensive coordinator in place?
Yeah, and I mean, I think we're going to see a week where Steve Smith doesn't play and Mike Wallace does play. But I think there's going to be three key points that Morningweg's going to bang home in his return to offensive play calling duties. And that one is lean on Terrence West. I think they're going to try to establish that every game. The offensive line has been coming together mostly because Marshall Yanda is once again our top graded guard. He's been one of the best guards in football for the past few years. But he's now banged up a little bit. So is Stanley, the tackle. So is, I forgot, one other lineman they also have banged up. They had a really lengthy injury report today. So did the Giants. It's going to be an interesting game. But I think that's what they're going to try to do the first thing. And then second, they're going to try to take more deep shots with Mike Wallace. That's another thing that was mentioned in Trestman's firing. And then third, they're going to try to do more up-tempo stuff because that's what Flacco wants to do. Flacco made comments all throughout the first 4 weeks when Trestman wasn't using it enough. And that's not easy to do. You can't just do that on the road, really, when you're in loud environments. But those are the three things they're going to try to do. So I think the offense might be more productive going forward when it finally gets healthier. But as far as right now, they're banged up. The good news for them is, at least as far as this week goes, they're facing a banged up Giants secondary as well that didn't look like it was able to stop too many people past 2 or 3 weeks, even though they did get 2 interceptions last week. The same player did it, Janoris Jenkins. But I think this week Wallace is a decent play. We saw the Giants give up a big play to DeSean Jackson in week 3. We know it's still possible there. They have a undrafted free agent practice squad player starting at safety. So, you know, he could get burned. So I think, to me, Wallace is the only play I'm looking at this week just because I don't think they're going to be able to really go with the tempo they want. And the Giants have been able to shut down the run all season except for a few snaps against Eddie Lacy last week. So I don't see West having a big game either.
Okay. You failed to mention the world's greatest tight end, Dan, Dennis Pitta. So I'll just assume that was an oversight or accident or what. So.
Well, I thought you were going to say Crockett Gilmore because he is the world's greatest tight end name.
That's true. Yeah. And if anyone can figure out which tight end they're going to focus on or feature from a week-to-week basis, like, you should definitely have a job in the NFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, you didn't mention Kenneth Dixon. I'm intrigued to see what they decide to do balance-wise. I can't imagine them taking away the job from Terrence West right now. I think that he earned it. They were able to let go of Justin Forsett in the meantime. But I know there are a lot of Kenneth Dixon owners out there who are concerned. I think this is why, you know, I don't want to do this I told you so thing. It's kind of the same thing with Derrick Henry owners.
But
it was the same thing with Derrick Henry owners too. It's just, again, rookie running backs, it's boom or bust, and you kind of have to evaluate that immediately. And like, for instance, like Derrick Henry, he's just not going to beat out DeMarco Murray at this job. Just right. let it go. Like this talent, the potential is great. But DeMarco Murray is doing it now really well at an elite level. So you either sell high to the DeMarco Murray owner, or I don't know what else you do. I guess you just sit on him because he's not going to start anytime soon.
Well, and yeah. So, and on the flip side of that, you've got Jordan Howard, who had no one in front of him. You know, Jeremy Langford, for all we talked about him in the offseason, wasn't a big obstacle. And now Jordan Howard's lighting it up. So, you know, and you could argue that Derrick Henry is the better talent than Jordan Howard, but Jordan Howard had a much better situation than Derrick Henry did, at least when it came to a fantasy standpoint.
And it still took a Langford injury.
Sure.
We forget that. It still took an injury. It's not like he won the job. Someone got injured, and then he won the job after the fact. So because oftentimes coaches are worried because rookie running backs, pass protection, and ball security are frequently issues with rookie running backs. So if you have a veteran in front of them who's not doing those things, then they usually stick with their guy. So I just thought that maybe I'd bring that up since we were talking about Terrence West. So I think that, in my opinion, they're going to stick with him unless he totally jacks up. Right.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think as long as he's doing well, they have no reason to flip that switch. So, all right, very good. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we will get to another edition of This or That.
This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF NFL podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories, every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
All right, welcome back, everyone. We are going to get into everyone's favorite game, This or That, where we pick two players from the same position, and we discuss if you should start this player or that player. So first up, let's just look at the quarterbacks. And you two duke it out. Believe me, this is no holds barred there. So you two, you know, scrap and claw and do whatever you got to do to prove your point. So first up, let's go with the quarterbacks. I know, Dan, you had wanted to talk about Carson Palmer. So we can decide either between Carson Palmer or Ben Roethlisberger. Go.
Who goes first in this or that?
You do.
Okay. All right. Well,
make your case, Dan.
I mean, if you're going to put me Ben Roethlisberger against Carson Palmer, I mean, come on there. Come on, Matt. I mean, come on, man. Like, that's a come on, man. I'm not going to pick Carson Palmer over Ben Roethlisberger. Don't put me in that position. I thought this or that is like a more even matchup. You're trying to put Ben Roethlisberger against a Dolphins secondary that can't even field the player that's been drafted? Yeah. Come on.
Come now.
All right.
We're not even going to fight about this. Otherwise,
I'll give you a more difficult one.
All right. Thank you.
Carson Palmer or Blake Bortles.
Okay, this one I can kind of get into and sink my teeth into a little better. So I'm going to stick up for my boy, Carson Palmer, who has been much maligned. So obviously, Bortles has a pretty solid matchup too against the Bears defense that's almost as banged up as the Jets defense in the secondary. But there's a lot of panic I see on Carson Palmer. And talk of him being finished. The floodgates are open. People love to jump on board. Meanwhile, just two games ago, he threw for 304 yards and three touchdowns and basically like 2.5 quarters of work. His struggles this season, Palmer's, have come against the Bills and Rams defense. They're currently ranked number 3 and number 4, respectively, in our overall defensive grades. Both are in the top 10, top 5 in pass coverage and pass rush. And now he gets to face a Jets team that is pretty much the complete opposite of that. We don't know if Darrell Revis will be back. With the way Revis has played, it shouldn't matter too much. He hasn't played well this season, and that's not a knock on Revis. I'm a big fan of his career, but I'm just going by the numbers here. The big issue for the Jets, we can expect some issues with their secondary this year. They were very top-heavy going into the year. They didn't have much depth, and they've graded out as our 31st best, so our second worst pass coverage team overall. But the issue is the Jets were generating a pass rush last year under Todd Bowles in his first year, and that's just completely gone away. They're just our 26th best team in pass rush. They're not getting any pressure. That was part of the reason why Ben Roethlisberger so easily picked them apart last week. And I think Palmer's going to do that same thing. I think we're too quick to give up on Palmer, and I think Palmer's actually one of my favorite plays this week. And a guy like Bortles, who still has the matchup but kind of can fall prey to maybe a slower pace if the Bears control the ball on the ground like they did last week with Jordan Howard, and then he'll be relying on kind of the big play like Luck did with Hilton. But, you know, that's more fickle. You don't always know. I think Palmer's going to be a consistent player with a lot of big play potential against this Jets secondary.
Okay. Brandon, Bortles or Palmer?
Well, I think for me, what we're talking about here is that Palmer, I think, has the better upside. But, you know, if you look at Bortles, he's had 2 touchdowns in each of his last 3 games. Now, he has had some interception issues. But, you know, Carson Palmer, part of the problem is the hot or cold nature of it, right? Now, he's in a good matchup, just like Dan said. I'm not going to totally – I have them ranked right next to each other, actually. I have Carson Palmer and then Blake Bortles. So, to me, it's kind of like a tied for me. I don't want to be I know I need to take a stand, and I really need to fight for Blake Bortles. So
that's
I will say this,
ratings, Brandon, don't you know,
I'm going to say that I'm hoping that over the bye that kind of got it together. Obviously, the up and down nature of Allen Robinson and the borderline disappearance act by Allen Hurns has been negatively affecting them. Also, it looks like Julius Thomas is going to be back. That's another red zone threat. You have to like that. So I think that they're going to have to score more points, actually. I think that this is going to be a more competitive game. And you all know that that's what Blake Bortles does. You know, he's a third, fourth quarter comeback king kind of guy. And I think that's what's going to happen if they start Brian Hoyer and if the Chicago Bears, you know, kind of keep producing in the way that they have. You know, their offense, you know, Brian Hoyer has 300-yard games in a row. That's pretty crazy. So I think that if they continue moving the ball like that, then Blake Bortles is going to have to keep up. I think that there's a possibility that this Arizona game lacks being competitive. Also, I'm incredibly concerned about Michael Floyd, by the way. He's only caught 12 of his 33 targets on the season. That's just atrocious. So now he's going to have big games, but there's something wrong. So I'm a little worried, but I think John Brown is going to be great. I think their Fitzgerald's going to be great. So I feel good about Carson Palmer, but I guess I'll kind of give Blake Bortles the nod here because I should, based on your comments.
Thank you. Create some drama with us.
All right.
I feel like, Brandon, that was the worst defense ever.
Wow. Okay.
Sorry.
Super hot pick. All right. Let's get to one more quarterback question. And then it's kind of lower tier quarterback, so not the studs. Okay. Carson Wentz or how you had just mentioned, Brandon, Brian Hoyer. So, Dan, which one do you got?
Yeah. So, obviously, Wentz was a guy last week who I wrote about in my matchups column as my top matchup of the week. And that's because he was facing that Lions defense. He didn't actually do as much as I thought he would, but he still put up good numbers. But this week I'm going to go with Brian Hoyer over Wentz, because I think if there's one thing that the Redskins have done well, it's play pass defense, and they're not even that great in it. But, you know, they have our 12th best pass coverage ranking on the season. And a lot of that is because of Josh Norman, who I think has been playing a lot better than people give him credit for. And I don't think people are really looking at it in depth when they say he's having a bad year, because he's actually having an amazing year. He's top 10 in our cornerback pass coverage grade. So I think he'll kind of help stymie that Eagles passing game. And in division games, I think you can stay away a little bit more, because they kind of have a different feel to them and a more grimy, grudgy type feel, where you're going to get kind of a more physical game. I don't think that plays as well for the passing game. As far as Brian Hoyer goes, I think Brandon kind of puts it perfectly. Like, what this guy's thrown for 300 yards the past 3 games. He hasn't thrown an interception yet. He's putting the ball on the money. He's spreading the ball around. Alshon Jeffrey owners probably aren't happy about that, but it's working for his fantasy points. And we're not talking about a Jaguars defense that has really done too much improvement this year. I mean, they're middle of the pack as far as a pass rush goes. They're finally starting to generate a little bit of pressure in recent weeks, and they're kind of middle in the pack in pass coverage, but they can kind of be beat on the outside. Their cornerbacks are smaller on the smaller side. So I think that Hoyer can kind of finally take advantage of Jeffrey in this matchup. So we'll see, but I think that Hoyer's the play.
Brandon, do you agree?
So the Los Angeles Rams actually give up 255 passing yards per game, which is actually more than the Jacksonville Jaguars, who give up 216 yards per game. No, it's not I'm so sorry. My dog is like freaking out.
Your dog disagrees.
There's like someone having a party next door. This is the worst. Lucy, come on now. New York City, baby. This is our life. So you have neighbors that throw parties and they're right next to you. But I would say that there is a very distinct possibility that this is kind of a bounce back game for Wentz. And actually last week wasn't terrible. And certainly that last interception, I know a lot of veterans that would have thrown that interception too. So I'm not freaking out about it. He was trying to win the game. That happens. So it wasn't fantastic, but it certainly didn't change my opinion about him whatsoever. The big thing that Los Angeles is really good at doing is defending the run when it comes to the quarterbacks. They've given up almost nothing on the ground to quarterbacks. Well, that's fine, because you know who else does nothing on the ground? Carson Wentz. So it's going to be perfect for his style of play, actually. So that's one of the things. You know, Jacksonville gives up a lot more kind of scrambling quarterback play. So we'll see. But I actually think they'll both have pretty decent games. But I think that Wentz will be one of those guys, especially if you're playing in DFS. It's going to be very low ownership, very low. And he's still a bargain.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to some running backs. Dan, Theo Riddick or Isaiah Crowell this week?
Ooh, so Crowell from the start, right off the bat, takes a huge hit for me because they just lost their top premier guard, Joel Bitonio. He's been our eighth best guard this year. He's been top 10 across the board the past few seasons. He's out. I think that in general, when you're looking for running back plays, opposing running backs to the Titans, it's not the best spot because the Titans on offense like to control the clock and have those slow grinding games where Malarkey kind of uses the entire play clock. So it's really bad for your game flow and play like that. And as far as the other side of it goes, you know, this is another game where they're going to have to use Theo Riddick. I'm not a Theo Riddick fan. I'm so happy I don't own him, so I don't have to make these weekly decisions on when he's going to catch his random touchdown pass. But you know what? If there's a week that he should do it, as far as the matchups go, it's obviously a week like this against the Rams front, because they're not going to be able to really generate too much between the tackles. They'll probably have to go to, you know, a shotgun pass first spread mode earlier. The Rams don't have the best linebackers for pass coverage. Ogletree's all right in the middle, but they don't really have the guys on the edges and the outside linebacker spots. So I think Riddick is the safer play, but I also think he has the higher upside. So I know Crowell's been there and he has the starting job, but to me, I think that Bitonio loss is going to have a huge, huge impact on that running game.
Brandon, Riddick or Crowell?
Well, you know, Bill Belichick, the number one thing that he likes to do is to take away the best weapon on the other team. So obviously Isaiah Crowell had his worst week last week because he's by far the most consistent weapon and the one that plays at one position. So I think that basically Bill Belichick said, fine, you know, Terrell Pryor, you go ahead and try to play every position on the field. I'm going to guard against Isaiah Crowell. And that's exactly what happened. You know, it was also his second lowest amount of equal to his lowest amount of touches on the season. The only other time was at Philadelphia in week one. And as we know, up until last week, at least, Philadelphia has a pretty decent defense. So I'm not freaking out about Isaiah Crowell. He's had at least 79 yards and or a touchdown in his other four outings. I think that if, you know, listen, there's also rumors that maybe Josh McCown's going to be back, which to me sounds crazy. But if McCown's back, they're going to have to respect the pass a little bit, right? I think there's a possibility that they could be a little sneaky this week. So, again, you know, guessing when Theo Riddick's going to blow up or not, it's a little tiring for me. And sometimes I just like the guy that I know that's going to get the touches, and that's Isaiah Crowell.
Okay. One more running back battle for this round. Dan, let's start with you. Melvin Gordon or Ryan Matthews this week?
That's an interesting one because I think that, you know, Melvin Gordon's been an extremely consistent play. He's somebody I actually wrote about in my trade column as somebody who I would look to sell high on because I think that he hasn't really shown the same kind of burst and the same kind of tackle breaking ability that he and forced tackle. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say tackle breaking. I should say the ability to force missed tackles like he did in his rookie season. I don't know if that's still because of the lingering effects of his what he had a knee surgery this offseason. I'm blanking on the name for it. It was the same kind that it was the microfracture variety, right? So in my opinion, the scariest of all the knee surgeries, the microfracture, because, you know, the players don't always get back that same burst. And I haven't seen it yet from Melvin Gordon. I really haven't. I kind of saw it a little bit on that one run he had to the goal line last week that he then got his touchdown vultured by Hunter Henry on. But to me, you know, against a team like the Broncos, you're really, really banking on those short touchdowns. And it seems like a unlikelihood. And now you got on the other side, of the flip side of things, you have Ryan Matthews, who I know he had his fumble and he had his mistakes in the last game, but he looked really good and really healthy. And he's facing this Redskins run defense that has ranked 25th best this season. Really, every team has run on them. We just talked about Terrence West chewing them up in the first half last week before the Ravens abandoned the run. So to me, it's just a matter of matchups. Why play a guy who's been a little bit sure of a bet, but also touchdown dependent in Gordon versus a guy who's been touchdown dependent and a less sure of a bet in a matchup where it's one bad run defense versus one amazing run defense? I'll take the bad run defense every time. So I'm going with Matthews in this one.
Brandon, what say you?
Can I agree? Yeah. Is that against the rules? No. Not really. Okay. What I will say is I do believe that the Denver defense kind of got a bad rep for last week. You could just tell that the whole team wasn't really in it behind Paxton Lynch. I think that they all kind of felt a little deflated. Just the everything was a little bit off. So yes, you know, Atlanta could run on them, but it was a weird week. And Trevor Siemian's back. They're really excited about this divisional matchup. It's in prime time. I'm not worried about that. So I think that Denver defense is still a legitimate elite option. And I do want to say that out loud. And yeah, you know what? I think Ryan Matthews is a good play as well, because just like Dan said, you know, this is a bad defense and Ryan Matthews looked good. I hope you listened, because I know that we've talked about this on the show where I was like, hold on to Ryan Matthews. Hold on. Cause everyone was like, it's going to be this committee. Wendell Smallwood is the guy now. It's like the DeAndre Washington talk, which I'm still apologizing to people for. So, but I will say, we can always talk about touchdown dependent, like it's a negative thing. And one of the people I always bring up is Jesse James. Okay. Yeah. He's touchdown dependent. But if they're always scoring touchdowns, at some point, you just have to accept that they're a red zone target. And that is something that is worth value, especially in your standard scoring leagues. If I'm playing standard, I'm going with Melvin Gordon. I think that he just has a better chance of getting in the end zone than Ryan Matthews, because I think they're going to try to use Darren Sproles more. I think they're going to try to get a little more creative with their offense. Every week, they're going to try to expand that playbook with their rookie quarterback. And they're doing the same thing in Denver. But Phillip Rivers, he doesn't need expanding. He just wants people to respect the run so that he can throw the ball. And so, yeah, I think if I'm in standard settings, I think that, again, Melvin Gordon, I mean, you just cannot argue with 7 touchdowns on the season. That's insane.
Yeah. Well, and to your point with touchdown dependent, it's the Tyler Eifert theory, meaning, hey, they may not get a lot of catches or yards, but by God, they're scoring a lot of touchdowns.
And look at Cincinnati right now. They don't have him there. So it was a role that they specifically had for him. It wasn't just random. It was a role. And I think that you have to know the difference. But to me, the role for Melvin Gordon is touchdowns. Which is crazy because he didn't score until, you know, rookie season. So it's like the complete opposite of what happened last year. But it's I think it's a differentiation that I think is worth making.
He's making up for lost time. That's what's happening.
Yeah, I guess.
And whoever would have thought that we'd be uttering the words that Denver was like welcoming back Trevor Siemian. And, you know, it was, thank God, he's their hero this year. Who would have thought? But
Who would have thought?
All right. Let's move on to receivers. Dan, Jeremy Maclin or Jarvis Landry this week?
So I actually love Maclin in this matchup. He's probably one of my favorite plays in general this week because he's been seeing a lot more time in the slot this season, over 50% of his routes. That means he'll get to go with a favorite, a PFF whipping boy favorite of mine, a guy I wrote a lot of matchup articles about last year in my matchup machine, and somebody who it's kind of not improved at all. He's just not there. A former top 15 pick, I think it was, maybe 10 overall, DJ Hayden, their slot cornerback for the Raiders. And he's so burnable, and he's it's consistently happening. It happened in 2015. It's happening this year. Maclin's going to eat in that matchup. He really is. And this Raiders offense has been putting so much pressure on opposing teams that I think that they are in more of a pass-heavy game script. So everything to me adds up to a big week for Maclin.
Brandon, do you agree? You can agree. Well, it's okay.
I mean, we're all friends here. Everyone that he has picked, I have ranked above the other people, but I am okay making arguments for other people. Okay. They're going to have to throw the ball against Pittsburgh. And so far, the only consistent target that they have is Jarvis Landry. He has had 7 or more targets in 4 of his 5 outings. Now, last week was a disaster. There were only 3 targets. And then he did a weird rush thing. It's Miami, and that's why he's lower on my rankings. So to be entirely frank, I'm one of the highest on Maclin, and I'm one of the lowest on Landry. But if you are in a PPR league, I do think he's going to get double-digit targets this week. They have to at least put up a fight against Pittsburgh. And the way that Pittsburgh's offense has been ticking, other than the 1 week against Philadelphia where they disintegrated into nothingness, basically they've been just firing on all cylinders. You got to keep up with him. And the only way you can do that is to feed the ball to Jarvis Landry. Now, the problem is he's always in the slot. It's always these short little dump offs, and he's going to have to create everything after the catch. And that makes me a little bit nervous. But c'est la vie, you know? I guess, yes, fine. PPR, that's my very weak argument.
That's okay. Look, I know it was tough to support a Dolphin on offense. I get it.
So. You guys are so mean.
All right. One more receiver battle, if you will. Terrell Pryor or Sammy Coates Brandon, you can go first this time.
Well, it all depends on Sammy Coates' health. That's the number one thing. We're not quite sure what's all going on there. I think that let me just check my rankings because I want to be entirely honest here. Yeah. So I have Terrell Pryor ranked higher, but I'm going to tell you why. I'm living in a fantasy land where Josh McCown's playing football. So if he is not playing football, I will take him down. But I decided that I would base all of my rankings this week, including of Isaiah Crowell, of Gary Barnage, and of Terrell Pryor. They are much higher in my rankings today. And this is exactly why sometimes you listen to these shows and what have you, but keep your ear to the news. If Josh McCown's not playing, I am going to take him down. But Sammy Coates made a lot of mistakes. It's a lot of big plays. To me, he's more of a GPP play than someone that I feel really great starting in my, you know, season-long fantasy league. So, yeah, I mean, I started him everywhere last week, everywhere. But I think that there's a possibility that this is a Le'Veon Bell game and an Antonio Brown game, and then they just don't care. You know, I mean, it's just going to be ugly. So depending on what happens with the injury, yeah, I think that Terrell Pryor has earned his spot as the number one wide receiver on that team. He has done so much for that team. He works so hard. I'm into it.
He's the number one receiver and the fourth quarterback. So. And he's doing it well. So, Dan, do you agree?
So I agree. I'm going to make the case for Coates, even though I have Pryor much higher. I think something Brandon touched on a little bit earlier is that even in a game where, you know, Bill Belichick basically looked at that Browns roster and said, okay, do we really need to take anybody out besides Crowell and Terrell Pryor? No. So those are the two guys he tried to take out. And Pryor still put up a 4-for-46 line, which is not terrible, including a pass attempt and a rush or two. I think it was maybe two or three rushes. And so now he doesn't have to deal with that. But this Titans defense is a little better than people expected them to be. So I'll take Coates in the really good matchup against this Dolphins secondary that's extremely beat up. And they're not really generating the pass rush they hope to generate either. So, you know, it's just a matchup thing for me. I'll play the better matchup, big play guy. But I think in general, and if I didn't have to make this argument, I'd probably go Pryor because Coates seems like more of a GPP play in a week where Le'Veon Bell is going to go nuts.
Okay.
I mean, nuts for Bell. I would get him in every single GPP, every single cash game lineup. I think I don't care about ownership for Le'Veon Bell this week. I don't care. He scored 20 plus points. Yeah, for sure. It's either 24 and 25 or 24 and 23 in his first two games on DraftKings. That's against the Chiefs defense and the Jets run defense. So come on. Now we got the Dolphins on tap.
All right. Let's move on to tight ends. Brandon, Jesse James or Dwayne Allen?
I'm going Jesse James.
Okay.
And again, I just defended
Jesse James.
I am. He's playing in over 94% of the snaps. So it's not just that he's the touchdown guy. He's just on the field all the time. So he has more opportunities to be the guy that he'll throw to. Now, again, I think this is going to be a Le'Veon Bell game. I think that we're 100% on board with that. And Antonio Brown just always does Antonio Brown. So, and I miss the twerking. It's too bad he keeps getting fined. It's unfortunate. They really take the fun out of these things. But hey,
I mean, we can do a GoFundMe and pay for his fines.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there's a possibility it doesn't happen. But my point is, do you know that he is second out of all tight ends? He's tied, by the way, but with the three touchdowns on the season. The only person that has more than that is Martellus Bennett with four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew that last week because heading into last week before Martellus Bennett's three-touchdown game, only two tight ends had three touchdowns on the season.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's hard for me to – sit someone like that, especially going against like the Miami D. I know he may not. And if he doesn't, you know what, he'll get like three catches for 30 yards and that's not great, but you know what? That's what tight ends do. As at a certain point, we just have to be like, well, I want the guy with the touchdown upside. Yeah.
Yeah. Dan, what about you?
Yeah. So did you strategically pick these ones, Michael? Because we have two guys who I like it because we have two guys who are one target apart on the season. They're one reception apart. They're one touchdown apart. But James also, who has one more touchdown, has 60 less yards. So they pretty much have the same amount of points in a standard league. So I like that move by you. I like that move by you. Really put us to the test here as analysts. But you also make it a little easy for me in that sense because I'm going to just go with the matchup. I want a lot of exposure on this Dolphins defense. They're terrible. They don't have anybody to play. They don't have the linebackers to compete in the passing game. They don't have the cornerbacks and the safeties, aside from Rashad Jones, who's actually expected to be out for this game. Rashad Jones, their best player on defense. So give me that over a Texans defense that still can compete without Watt. They're still kind of top half in most of our overall grades. So I'm going to go with the matchup play here in a pretty even matchup otherwise.
Okay. Well, and then let's finish the episode with something a little different with this or that on team defenses, because there are plenty of leagues that still do that. So for this week, let's choose between, the Ravens and the Chiefs. So Brandon, you're up first.
Hold on.
The Ravens are at the Giants.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are at the Raiders.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Ravens. And I had, you know what, it threw me. I was like, is that close? Like, I mean, like the Ravens are very good right now. Mm-hmm. And the Giants are having some issues. Let's put it that way. And I just, yeah, I mean, I'm starting the Ravens a lot of different places, to be entirely frank. I had to rethink about what was going on with Kansas City, but I don't want anyone going up against Oakland right now. They score a lot of points. The turnovers aren't really happening with Oakland. And I just don't see where they're going to get a lot of fantasy points. They may compete on a real football scale, maybe some sacks, I guess. But to me, these are all things that I think about when I think about the Giants.
Dan, you're our resident Giants expert.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're giving me two options, and in both options, the opposing quarterbacks are two guys that I think, even though Eli Manning and the Giants offense is in a complete funk, I don't really like betting against these offenses when I'm streaming my defenses. But, you know, if you're not going to give me the option of maybe the Titans versus Cody Kessler or something like that.
I'm definitely not.
You're not.
Fine.
So, or even a home Lions defense against the Rams. No one owns a home Lions defense. I can't pick them against Keenum. All right, guess not.
Because
they look a lot better against the Eagles and they have Darius Slay. So between these two teams, I'll take the contrarian play and I'll go with the Chiefs for reasons that, the Chiefs are coming off a bye week. I think that always helps to have the extra days of rest. And the Chiefs, you know, have been a little bit better on defense than given credit for. Obviously, they're a much better team at home. They have our 19th best run defense this year. They're not generating the same kind of pressure they did last year. They're only 28th, and that's usually what leads to those turnovers and you know, fumble recoveries, things like that, interceptions. But 14 days rest, divisional game. They've seen Carr before. They know how to beat Carr. I'm going to take the divisional opponent on 14 days rest.
Well, good. That will do it for this or that. And that will do it for this episode. I'm Michael Moore for Brandon Marion Lee and Dan Schneier. We'll see you next time on the Fantasy Slant.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.